My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. My personal life quest and the theme of Destination Unlimited is to find the crossroads of science and spirituality. This is an age-old quest going back to the philosopher-scientists of ancient Greece and other civilizations in antiquity. A revisioning of this quest began in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The 20th century's New Age, as it is called, was thought to have been birthed in California and other progressive thinking communities. What most are not aware of is that it actually was the Midwest that was the first cradle of advanced spiritual expansion, and that the father of this quest was a successful media mogul and venerated owner of a baseball team. John E. Fetzer, born in 1901, was a radio pioneer who built a telecommunications and communications empire and was the sole owner of the Detroit Tigers from 1961 to 1983. Behind the scenes, he was a seeker who believed that happiness, positivity, and peace on earth could be found through a pathway to a higher intelligence. He used his resources to fund this quest with research studies including Stanford, Duke, and Princeton, and the groundbreaking research of J.B. Ryan into ESP. This hidden quest is being revealed for the first time by my guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Fetzer biographer Brian C. Wilson and Fetzer's nephew, Bruce Fetzer. Brian C. Wilson is professor of American religious history in the Department of Comparative Religion at Western Michigan University. He's the author of Dr. John Harvey Kellogg and the Religion of Biologic Living and Yankees in Michigan. Bruce Fetzer is president, CEO, and trustee of the Fetzer Memorial Trust, a former trustee and treasurer of the John E. Fetzer Institute, a former trustee and member of the Foundation Financial Offices Group Chairman of the FFOG Compensation Survey, and advisor to other nonprofits. They join me this evening to discuss the just-published book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you so much for joining us. So let's start with you, Brian. Who was John E. Fetzer? Tell us about his early life.
Well, John Fetzer was born in small town Indiana, as he said, in 1901. And he grew up in a series of small towns, winding up in West Lafayette in Indiana. He was raised by a single mother. His father died when he was quite young. And John basically had a kind of very typical Midwestern upbringing. You know, he had his pals. He got into mischief. He had a playful dog. But a number of things kind of mark him out during his childhood as something a little bit special. He had his first mystical experience when he was 10 or 11 years old, and it's a very interesting one. He was playing around in an elevator at a local department store called Shortell's, and at a certain point, he had a vision of Jesus, and he was basically holding on to the leg of Jesus, and Jesus told him that he would never let go. And that really had a tremendous impact on John's spiritual quest. And then later, in 1918, he was stricken with the Spanish flu, which, of course, that was the year of the Great Pandemic, killed thousands, not millions. And he wasn't expected to live. And during that time of illness and convalescence, he made a vow that if he were saved, he would basically devote his life to spiritual projects. Well, he survived, and that's exactly what he did.
Now, his mother was a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, correct?
That's correct. She converted when John was in his late teens, and she became a very fervent member of this apocalyptic denomination. which actually has its headquarters just across the border in Michigan in Battle Creek at the time.
And how did that affect John's life?
Well, it's interesting because he had a pretty conventional Christian upbringing. He was baptized a Methodist, went to Sunday school, read the Bible. And when his mother converted, we don't know exactly when John converted, but he followed her into the church. And the important thing about this is that eventually he was recruited by the president of the Emmanuel Missionary College, which is the Seventh-day Adventist College today. It's Andrews University. And the reason he was recruited was because he had become very interested as a teen in the emerging science of radio. He had a brother-in-law who basically was a telegrapher for the railroads, taught him Morse code, and the two of them together started experimenting with small crystal sets and the emerging technology. And John Fetzer became absolutely fascinated by it, got his radio license, attended some classes at Purdue University in their experimental radio station. And so by the time he was in his 20s, he was quite the radio expert.
You know, when I was 7 years old, my uncle gave me a crystal radio set. This is 1960. And I remember being fascinated by putting this thing together, and it had this little galena crystal and a thing called a cat's whisker that was used for tuning. And being able to sit there long after I was supposed to be in bed around midnight and listening to these broadcasts coming out of Chicago and all wonderful faraway parts, being a little boy in New York, faraway parts to me of the world. And it sort of stimulated my interest in this concept of radio waves and energy. Did that have the same effect on John?
Yes, very definitely. Very definitely. It was an emerging technology, and it's hard for us to kind of recapture the magic of those little crystal sets. The idea that you could tune in and pull voices and music off the air was just remarkable. And one of the things that John Fetzer, he began reading about Nikola Tesla during this time period. And Tesla was one of the people who discovered the fact that you could send energy at a distance through radio waves. And this got John Fetzer thinking that perhaps radio waves are part of, obviously, electromagnetic spectrum, but what happens at the ends of the spectrum? These spread out into subtle energies? Is there a connection between the material world and the spiritual world based on these this electromagnetic spectrum? So I think from the beginning, especially through the influence of Tesla, his interest in radio was not only in terms of the technology and the engineering, but also the kinds of spiritual things that it inspired in him.
Bruce, what was your uncle like as a person?
Well, he was my great uncle. I dearly loved him. He was like a father figure to me, a mentor, and I worked with him the last 10 years of his life, and he very closely took me under his wing, and actually exposed me to a lot of these concepts. I came and started working with him initially as a chemical engineer, went to business school, got my MBA while working in his broadcast properties. But then I had a 20-hour-a-week personal internship with him, where I was exposed to a lot of his readings and a lot of the people that he met. And so outwardly, he was very prominent, successful, in command, but he was also quite a charismatic individual and a clear leader, a great leader, a great listener, and a great contributor to the societal good. He very much believed in public service and rose far and beyond the occasion many, many times.
Now, you were a scientist and an MBA, and he approached you and started relating all of these spiritual and metaphysical sciences. How did you react to that?
Well, it was quite a shock, personally, because, I also came at this from a more fundamentalist standpoint. So I didn't have an orientation in this up until 1981 when I started working with him. And by being exposed to things that were physically impossible, it changed my my boundary conditions, my paradigm, and I became intensely interested in moving from an orientation to materialism or the material world to the spiritual world because the personal experience was transformational.
How were you able to equate that with your personal religious foundation?
Well, I had to actually expand it. You know, I very quickly transitioned from more of a dogmatic approach to more of an inclusive experiential approach that included a lot of the precepts of spirituality, like acceptance, understanding, enthusiasm, awakening, awareness, and personal responsibility.
Now, I know your great uncle was interested in ufology. Did you ever have a UFO experience yourself?
No, I didn't, but I know he studied it very carefully, very closely.
And what prompted that study on his behalf?
Well, he actually was radio censor or assistant radio censor during World War II. It was a great service to the public, to the country. And he had access to a lot of the military files. Coming out of that, he very intensely studied, unconventional sightings by some of the bomber pilots and started his own search. And I think that prompted, one of his first speeches was on UFOs. And Brian, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Brian, you know what? I'm going to ask you to pick up on that in the next segment when we start the next segment. My guests this evening are Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about Brian's book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, and we'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
What does Meals on Wheels do? They deliver meals and smiles to homebound seniors. But Meals on Wheels does something else. They turn a volunteer's lunch break into a meaningful experience.
As small and as simple as the relationship is between a volunteer and a client of Meals on Wheels, it's really so impactful. I never thought that 5 minutes could make so much difference in the lives of two people, but it has.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. That's AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this evening are Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about Brian's new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. And before the break, Bruce was talking about John's interest in ufology. Brian, do you want to give us a little more on that, please?
Sure. I think John Fetzer's interest in UFOs came from a couple of different perspectives. One, as Bruce mentioned before the break, as radio censor, he found out about Foo Fighters during World War II, those mysterious objects that followed Allied fighters, and really kind of set the stage for the rise of UFO sightings in the late 40s. Part of John Fetzer's interest in UFOs was based on kind of the speculative engineering of these things. If they exist, how are they propelled? What kinds of materials are they made out of? Those kinds of things. And so a lot of the books he read speculated on those kinds of interesting kind of engineering issues. The other thing that interested him about this was that a lot of the people who claimed to be contactees of UFOs in the early 50s, back when this was a positive experience, were people who actually came out of theosophical backgrounds. And John Petzer himself had become very interested in a variety of different versions of theosophy during the 1940s. And so the contactees would talk about UFOs in terms of ascended masters and the Great Brotherhood. And their mission was essentially to catalyze a spiritual transformation of the world. And I think this is an idea that really caught on with John Petzer. And so he was fascinated for those two reasons.
For our listeners who are not familiar with theosophy and theosophical work, please explain it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Theosophy is a religious tradition that developed actually in the United States in the late 19th century. And it was really the brainchild of a Russian immigré named Helena Blavatsky. And Blavatsky really was interested in a variety of different issues, the harmony between science and religion. She was also fascinated with evolution. And she was also fascinated with Eastern thought, Hindu thought, and Buddhist thought. And so theosophy was an attempt to marry these various aspects into a viable religious tradition. And the ideas caught on. A lot of Hindu ideas or South Asian ideas, religious ideas like reincarnation and karma, really entered into the American consciousness through theosophical groups. One of the main things in theosophy was the idea that there were masters or groups of masters who were actually in communication with certain people and directing the kind of conscious evolution of humanity, with the idea that humanity was always evolving towards higher and higher levels of consciousness.
Bruce, what did your great uncle mean when he used the word spirituality?
He used spirituality in two ways. One is a practice, but then also as a place. So in terms of practice, it's going inside. It's any variety of inner work practices. And the objective of that is to wake up. As a place, he very much believed in spirit is almost a realm beyond the material. Coexistent with the material, but beyond and more subtle than that. And so spirituality did not include any particular dogma or constraint, but it also included, though, very much the personal commitment to waking up and to creating some impact in a material way in society to bring in, you know, an awakening, peace, and harmony and love.
When you talk about going inside, he was an early practitioner of meditation, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He very wrote a book called America's Agony, in which he actually talked about the conscious and the subconscious. And one of the ways of going beyond the monkey mind that we face in everyday life is to quiet the mind through inner practice or meditation. There are any number of ways of doing that, but John practiced a number of them. And he also exhorted, though, other people to do that.
And did he have a personal teacher or guru, or is this something he developed on his own?
He would oftentimes be working with teachers. So he started out, one of his earlier teachers was Maharishi in Transcendental Meditation. He would advise him on radio broadcasting. He worked with a book called A Course in Miracles, which is a channeled material. But then he also, in his final 5 years, was involved with the movement of spiritual inner awareness, which is a form of shop yoga, or the sound current, sound and light current. And he worked with a teacher in that as well. But then he also worked very carefully and closely with psychics in his later years as well.
Brian, in what sense was John Fetzer a New Ager?
Well, we have to be careful with the term, of course, because New Age today has taken on a kind of pejorative meaning. But for John Fetzer, who wrote about himself as a New Ager, the whole idea was that individual spiritual transformation would ultimately lead to a global spiritual transformation, or the New Age, the Golden Age. And so for John Fetzer, the idea was that spiritual practices would always not only have personal benefit, but if practiced assiduously and by enough people, eventually would have a larger global impact. And so that's why he's, I characterize him in the book as a New Ager, and that's a term that he actually used in the late 60s, almost a decade before New Age became a popular movement in this country.
You had mentioned theosophy. What were some of the other metaphysical traditions that he was interested in?
Well, after he left Seventh-day Adventism, he became very interested in spiritualism. There's a spiritualist camp in Indiana called Camp Chesterfield, and it's still up and operating today. So he visited there many times and was fascinated by the kinds of things he saw there. They also had a bookstore, and he would buy just armload after armload of metaphysical books. So he became very interested in not only theosophy, but all sorts of new thought movements. He read Christian Science. He became a Freemason in the 1930s and carried through with that. He became a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Mason in, 69. And from there, he got into things like older traditions, like Hermeticism and Rosicrucianism. So he really ran the gamut of metaphysical traditions in the United States. He was a seeker who was really open to a variety of different metaphysical traditions.
Was he a follower of Edgar Cayce's work?
Very much so. Very much so. He came. He never met Cayce, but he came into contact with Cayce's writings during the 30s, and then later on in his life, during the period of the early Fetzer Foundation in the 1970s and 80s, he actually funded projects that were run through the Association for Research and Enlightenment Clinic in Arizona. So he was fascinated by Cayce's readings. He was fascinated by Cayce's approach to spiritual evolution and conscious evolution. But he was also fascinated with the mind-body health issues that Edgar Cayce talked about.
Bruce, did your great-uncle ever convene groups to explore spiritual practices?
Yes, he did that privately. And he really felt in the resonance, that the resonance of a small group that were aligned not only validated each practice, but also provided a forum to explore. So as an example, he did convene in the early days of the foundation what he called a Monday night group, where he had seven eclectic people come on a Monday afternoon. We would call in the light. We would have a meditation. We would study either common material. And then we would close with the Great Invocation and then go out to dinner. And so that's an example where it would just be a free-formatted, unstructured study group. He had other study groups for the Course in Miracles and other materials as well.
And in those groups that you were talking about, did they ever have a common goal, and were they able to manifest that goal?
Well, the common goal actually was to support each other in their own spiritual practice. And so he very much believed that all walls are fed of the same source. And so it would be very common for him to have a Catholic, and people of metaphysical persuasions all in the same group. And so you know, the common goal was to bring in light, was to individually and collectively support each other in waking up and engaging, you know, a higher purpose.
And so, in actuality, many of these groups were composed of interfaith people, is that correct?
Absolutely. They were interfaith in nature, were not religious in content, but they would study some common metaphysical text.
My guests this evening are Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about the book John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian, please tell our listeners where they can get the book and find out more about the life of John Fetzer.
Well, the book will be available on August 6th through Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, and of course, a bookstore near you. There's also the Fetzer Memorial Trust has set up a portal where people who are interested in learning more about the life of John Fetzer and can download a free copy of the introduction and first chapter of the book are welcome to go. And I think Bruce can actually give detail on that.
Yeah, the portal name is infinitepotential.com.
infinitepotential.com. My guests this evening, Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, and we'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this evening, Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about Brian's new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian, did Fetzer believe that science and spirituality necessarily conflicted or not?
No. No, he believed that science and spirituality were two sides of the same coin, essentially, that a true science would recognize spirit, and spirit would only be recognized through a spiritualized science. And in fact, John Fetzer's vision for the New Age was that in addition to individual spiritual transformation through individual practice, he was also very interested in exploring creating a spiritualized science. that would kind of speed the process towards global spiritual transformation.
Did he ever believe that he was a reincarnation of someone else?
Yes. He believed very deeply that he had lived through many past lives, beginning all the way back to Atlantis. And in each case, he had a spiritual mission that he was charged with carrying out. And he believed that his last life, his present life, was going to be the period in which he could actually be successful in carrying out that spiritual mission. And that's what the Fetzer Institute really was the result of, was this idea that it was the fulfillment of a variety of lifetimes of experience and wisdom.
Bruce, what did your great uncle believe was the connection between mind, body, spirit, and health and well-being?
Well, mind, body, spirit very much believed in balance, and of course this stemmed from his days in masonry, but he very much believed in balance and the integration of all of these, you know, that balance between the physical, emotional, mental, in order to awaken spiritually. And this is where the sciences also came in too, because he very much believed in the interconnectedness of science and spirituality. And, you know, this mind-body-spirit connection lends itself very much now as we think of it as integrative medicine. But back in the 80s, when he was actually very heavily pursuing this, was expressed through his interest in energy medicine. So, for example, what are the multiple dimensions of the human experience that go beyond the material, perhaps beyond the material? And so the other dimension of mind, body, spirit is the whole role of intention, alignment, practice. And so it's not only just your health behaviors, but your attitude, your dreams, your spiritual practice, all of these are part and parcel of well-being that actually are antecedents to spiritual growth and waking up as well.
What energy modalities did he pursue?
He looked at a lot of different, a lot of alternative types of healing and diagnosis. He very much believed, and if we're talking about energy medicine, he very much believed that in addition to us being physical and chemical entities, that there's an energy signature to it. You know, is subtle energy actually something so minute we can't measure it yet, or is it something from another realm? So he was very much interested in, for instance, alternative forms of diagnosis that could catch things way before they become diagnosable with traditional techniques, and then also to treat them at that level so that the side effects would be very much minimized. He explored a vast array.
Did he study reading the energy field?
Absolutely. You know, he actually worked with mystics, and one of the things he was personally interested in is trying to create an atlas of what, for example, cancer might look like years before stage one detectable. Now, again, these are very unconventional thoughts, but if you can imagine, you know, a successful entrepreneur in John Fetzer being a visionary pioneer and entrepreneur, he really chose not to be constrained by convention. He was trying to push the frontier in all domains. And so he was also interested in very rigorously analyzing these things, bringing them into the lab to find out what really is true and what's not. So he didn't approach it as so much as a true believer, but as a true pioneer and considering anything and everything.
Brian, did John Fetzer work with mediums and spiritual advisors?
Yes, very much so. John Fetzer believed that to some degree he had some psychic power. In fact, he attributed his business intuition to a kind of ESP. But he was very mindful of his limitations, and so he sought out the best psychics and mediums and advisors that he could find. during the 1960s, he was a great friend of the famous psychic Gene Dixon. And during the 1970s, he had readings by a very famous spiritualist medium in England named Ina Twigg. And then back in Kalamazoo, he had a number of spiritual advisors, and the most important was Jim Gordon. And Jim Gordon really, during his last decade, became his personal psychic and channeler. And Gordon's channelings of ascended masters and other beings really helped John Fetzer formulate what the mission of the Fetzer Foundation was going to be.
How did he reconcile his intuition with business decision-making?
Well, he believed that his intuition really gave him kind of insight into not only good decision-making, but how to surround himself with the best people and building teams and building relationships in his businesses. Now, the interesting thing about John Fetzer was that the business was important and making money was important. But even more important than that was the spiritual goal. What were you going to do with this? And this became a really live issue for John Fetzer, especially during the 1940s when his businesses were taking off. How do you handle money spiritually, correctly, in a way that it becomes a moral force? And so he was thinking about these issues long and hard, and he really believed that his success was due in part to the fact that he had right intention in terms of his wealth.
And Bruce, for your uncle, great-uncle, what was the spiritual meaning of wealth? What did money mean to him in a spiritual sense?
Well, money was a form of energy to him, and you know, it was leveraged by dedicating it in service to the spiritual call. He really felt that his legacy was to help catalyze a global awakening, and by doing that, he dedicated his funds in a way to exploring in every respect the frontiers of our the nature of reality, but also what are the frontiers of spiritual practice that help accelerate and catalyze in the best way possible. And so for him, one anecdote I can tell that will just bring this to life is that, you know, in the 1967, he, as a Detroit owner, Detroit Tigers owner, they had lost the World Series. And this is in the height of the race riots. And he wrote an open letter to the public on the loss of the World Series, saying this is the ghost of John Fetzer speaking. He felt so much that he wanted to win the World Series for the purpose of unifying Detroit. The following year, Detroit, in the height of the race riots, did win the World Series and was credited by a renowned writer, Joel Falls, as actually saving Detroit from burning. And so years later, he was offered many times the opportunity to move the Detroit Tigers from downtown Detroit to the outskirts in Pontiac. He was promised a covered Silver Dome with concessions and so forth. And multiple times he turned them down. Every time he said, "I don't own a team, I'm just a steward of them." And so he thought first of serving the public, of actually doing the greater good, and then money flowed back to him. But the money that flowed to him was given to him as a steward for something greater. And it was always a something greater that he was giving it into.
You know, that's fascinating because as an MBA and anyone who knows the business world, of course, large corporations and those who run and own those large corporations do their fair share of donation to charity and creating wonderful charitable works. But the mentality of saying, "I'm just a steward of this, I'm just holding on to this for a higher purpose," that's rare and unique, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, he lived way below his means because it really never was his to begin with. And so This is why his search was so intense, is that, you know, he really felt that he was here to complete a mission in the world. Later in life, when the call became clear to him, he started dedicating his resources in ways that started actualizing it.
Interesting. Interesting how he could balance and reconcile his desire to be helpful and to build this wonderful community, this wonderful world essence that he was talking about, and balance with finance. I think that's really fascinating to me. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, if I could follow that up, because I think that also gave him a sense of having less fear. And because he was serving something greater, he was able and more comfortable in taking risks. And I think that also reinforced his insight, where he wasn't clouded by fear, but actually actualized by love. And so if you think about it, you know, he started his first business at the beginning of the Great Depression and kept betting the farm every time as he built his radio network and TV network and cable and then sports and so on. You know, it's very rare for anyone to succeed in any one of those businesses, especially when you're at the forefront of an industry. But then it's almost impossible to think that someone can keep betting the farm, leveraging it up each time, but then also succeeding every single time. So there were so many times he could have gotten wiped out, but he compounded wealth very, very rapidly, but also thought only of the public service first.
He had a higher CEO working on his behalf. My guests this evening are Ryan C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about Johnny Fetzer and the quest for the new age, and we'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Have you wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me, like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Knowing your breasts can save your life. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this evening are Brian C. Wilson and Bruce Fetzer. We're talking about John E. Fetzer and the quest for the new age. As the owner of the Detroit Tigers, did he apply his spiritual ideas other than we were talking about the not moving the team? And how do you manage a team spiritually? How do you do that?
Well, I think part of it, it's built into his business practices. It's also built into the, again, the people you surround yourself with, which I think was tremendously important for his success. And of course, a ball team is really a kind of ideal community that takes special care. And so to create that kind of community, it takes a kind of spiritual touch. Now, although John Fetzer was into all sorts of interesting spiritual practices, he rarely talked about these to his business colleagues, and he rarely asked the baseball team to follow his lead. But he did in a couple of instances that are very interesting. When John Fetzer began practicing transcendental meditation in the middle of the 70s, at one of the spring trainings, he suggested that he might want to take up transcendental meditation, and so facilitated that. And a number of the players actually took it up and found great spiritual value, and also it helped their athleticism as well. There's another really interesting story about Mark the Bird Fidrich, who was a star pitcher, who had a very interesting idiosyncratic pitching style. He was very successful, but he was also self-conscious about his process on the mound. And one of the things that John Fetzer did in order to give him confidence was he brought him into his office, and John Fetzer routinely carried a pendulum. And the pendulum was basically a way of helping him to make decisions. And so it was just simply a plumb bob, and he would hold it and basically ask yes-no questions, and whatever the deflection was left or right would help him make a decision. Well, there wasn't a decision to be made here, but what he wanted to show Mark Fidrich was that everybody has some powers of psychokinesis, and even with that little plumb bob, you could show that you have this power of PK. And that's exactly what Fetzer told Fidrich he was doing on the mound with his unorthodox pitching style. Was essentially he was channeling his own powers of PK into his pitching. And that seemed to help. Fidrich, in a later memoir, basically said that he really appreciated that lesson.
That's fascinating. It reminds me of a story written by George Plimpton as basically an April Fool's joke many, many years ago. I think it was in the early 80s, where he created a pitcher by the name of Siddhartha Finch who could throw a 130-mile-an-hour fastball. And his whole message was he would meditate before going out to the mound. And that's how he was able to develop his style, which I think is fascinating. Bruce, please tell us about some of your great uncle's donation to various foundations of research, such as Duke University and the Stanford Research Institute.
Well, you know, when John started funding in this area, he was always interested in the frontiers of the time. And actually, had he lived until today, he would have gone beyond what he did in the past and would be looking at today's frontiers. And so back when he started this out in the 70s, he was interested in as a frontier, you know, elements of consciousness. And so where do you go to look? You look at possibly parapsychology and the different aspects of that. And so J.B. Ryan at Duke University was one of the first laboratories that was taking a look at precognition as well as PK. He had worked with Bill Tiller at Stanford University looking at some PK effects. He was interested in the Stargate project on remote viewing at Stanford Research Laboratory. He was interested at the Pair Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Laboratory with Bob John and Brenda Dunn at Princeton, looking at PKs there as well there. But then he was also starting to look at measuring EEG and the impacts of meditation, and James Hart at UCLA was actually looking at entrainment, or you know, the effect of this is way back, but the effect of two meditators meditating side by side and what would happen to their brain waves. So he was always interested in the frontiers of what the potential links are into understanding what consciousness is, how to measure it, and how to develop it more fully.
Did he ever meet Ingo Swann?
Don't recall. Do you know, Brian?
I believe he did. He took a visit to SRI. It must have been the early 80s, and he met the group that was doing the research on remote viewing.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with that, remote viewing was actually done initially as a government project as part of a type of espionage or psychic espionage, and turned into something much greater. And at some point, if you're interested, there's several books on Ingo Swann and the Stanford Research Institute, if you'd like to follow up on that. So why did Fetzer keep his spiritual search a secret so late in life?
Well, I think the reason... The first thing was he was a very private person, and I think temperamentally it suited him to keep his search a secret. But there were also business considerations, because Southwest Michigan, still today, is a very conservatively Christian area. And he was concerned that if his advertisers and his listeners knew that he was exploring these various metaphysical currents, which could be found everywhere in the Midwest. The Midwest has always been a hotbed of this kind of spirituality. But he was concerned that it might actually impact his businesses and his licenses. And by late in life, I think it became almost a habit for him. He was very adept at compartmentalizing the various aspects of his life. And in fact, one time he basically said, if anybody writes a book about me, it's going to be the Nine Lives of John Fetzer.
You know, it's fascinating to me. If you had taken any other mogul of any other industry and they were living the second life and pursuing the spiritual life that he was pursuing, I guarantee you somebody would find out about it. Somebody in the press would find out about it. And how did he keep it from the press?
Well, that's a good question. He did later in life do two or three interviews with either local magazines or national magazines like Psychic Magazine or New Frontiers. So it was out there, but I think part of it was that when he was basically becoming public with this, this was the height of the New Age movement in the 1980s. And I think it fit with the zeitgeist at the time, and people were more accepting of it, at least then.
Bruce, how did your great uncle ensure that his legacy would be carried out after his death?
Well, you know, it was very important to him to select people that understood what the vision was and actually had a personal practice. And so he selected very carefully the trustees at both the Johnny Fetzer Institute as well as the Fetzer Memorial Trust, which was created as a result of his estate. And so, you know, the trust is a special case where it exists for a period of time and funds out of existence. But it was five of his closest associates that he appointed permanently to help guide the ship. The other thing that he did was interesting because he was very unconventional in a lot of things. As he stipulated that after his death, there would be no chair of the board. And so he was very interested in the board working together, congealing and aligning around and staying aligned around that mission so that it wouldn't veer off track.
And what were some of the projects that were carried on?
Well, following his death?
Yes.
Very much the mind-body movement very much became actualized. Through the Bill Moyer series on healing in the mind, as well as the Harvard Center on alternative medicine. Some of the other big splashes were emotional intelligence that was publicized, relationship-centered care, and the notion that the doctor-patient relationship is an asset, not a liability. And then contemplative mind and society, which actually by promoting contemplative practices and has spawned some 50 million plus Americans performing some kind of or integrating some type of contemplative practices. So, so the Institute in many ways has catalyzed many different movements, but it's done it in the by doing it the way that John Fetzer lived his life, is to say, we're going to serve something larger, and same with the Memorial Trust. We're working on science programs, you know, updating his view of what's at the frontier through the Fitzer Franklin Fund by looking at the frontiers of the nature of reality. And so what we're trying to do is look for theory and evidence that might help shift the paradigm from everything being local and random to being non-local and possibly interconnected. So those are close corollaries with mysticism and spirituality.
This is so wonderful. I am so happy to have been asked to do this interview and find out, because Johnny Fetzer is now one of my personal heroes after all the work that he's done, the work that you gentlemen have done to share his message and carry it on. The book is called Johnny Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian C. Wilson is the author, and Bruce Fetzer, his great nephew. Brian, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get the book.
It can be found at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and hopefully your local bookstore. It's published by Wayne State University Press.
And Bruce, please tell our listeners one more time the website where they can find out more information.
Yes, infinitepotential.com is a landing page where if you go there, you can actually get the first chapter.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us this evening and illuminating us on the life of Johnny Fetzer. And this is something that everybody has to get a hold of, because I think in our world, especially in the climate we're living in today, we need to get back to the work that Johnny Fetzer was doing. Thank you so much for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Berman. Have a wonderful week.